everybody. This is Mark Chaffardini. Thank you very much for coming back to the Go See Talk podcast experience. Yeehaw, we are here in Texas, the place where if you raise a glass, you're sure to hit a horse, a gun, or the hot heat that envelops us on a daily basis. We also got snakes, but one way that we get through all of this misery in this mythical land of gigantic proportions is getting to know composers, talking to them about their craft, and the soothing sounds they put in our ears. So, Jeff Danna is a superbly talented musician, guitarist, man of many talents. He's a boondog saint, and we're even going to go onward with him to the wonderful world of, well, Texas, talking about the hunting wives and all that that entails. So, Jeff, thank you, thank you, thank you. How are things in your world?
Things are going well. Working hard on a cowboy show, actually, but not a Texan cowboy show. So, Northwest.
Okay.
Northwest, good hats. Good hat show.
Yeah, you'd be surprised what hats and boots go for. You would think that that's a more like a readily available item, but yeah, $600,000-$700,000 for a good quality piece of footwear, hatwear. It's crazy.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. I can imagine, actually. Yeah. The good one, the good stuff.
Well, as a Texan, and I'll be honest, a disclaimer, I've lived in Texas more than half my life, but I'm not born and raised here. So by transplant, I now am a Texan, and I feel like we'd like to welcome you to the fold with your nebulous, twangy, somewhat innocent sounds to the hunting wives, but also some crazy out-of-the-nowhere things like violas and fiddles and stuff. So I want to run through a couple tracks with you and kind of maybe pick your brain. Sure. I think, you know, maybe just in chronological order, I've really drawn to how Sophie meets Margot. And again, for the reasons that I suggested are nebulous, twangy, somewhat innocent. You know, you kind of set the stage for something that, as you find throughout the show, tops and tails. So how do you work on something knowing that it might have to turn dark or have some twang put on it?
That's right. You know, it's one of the ways we test out a theme. When I'm starting to write a theme, is I'll think, okay, I have this character, and I need to, in this case, Sophie, and I need to see, you know, where are the different places where that theme would lay out in the first episode, for example. And then as I'm working on an idea, I'll start with one scene. I'll go, well, there's her in the car with Margot at the end, and Margot saying, well, what does Sophie want? And I'm sort of writing that. I get a sketch of that going. And then later on, I go, well, this is going to need to work in the bathroom too. So I'll take it and I'll go to the bathroom. I go, so how will I have to change it or adapt it to also be appropriate there too? And if it's malleable and works in both places, or malleable enough, then you go, okay, this is a candidate for a theme. So I'm pretty sure the Sophie theme started in the pickup truck and then went to the bathroom, which was a cue that took a while to figure out just because the balance is so tricky in that scene, right? I mean, you know, you can't really be sexy. That would be kind of silly, but it's not super romantic. But Sophie's a little bit in awe of Margot. She's a little bit freaked out to be at this fish out of water setting she's found herself in, and suddenly someone's being friendly, and you know, so there was, it was a little bit sexy and a little bit romantic, but I had to sort of just sit in the midst of all these sort of places, and it took a minute to figure that one out. But once it was nailed down there, I went to a few other places, as I was saying, and seemed to really fit, especially whenever she and Margot were together. So it sort of became the Margot-Sophie theme.
I'm going to throw a jib boom straight to the west, and we're going to jump to Life of Pi, where you played guitar on Michael's score. So going that and then coming back, the fact that you are a musician in addition to composer, are there times on this score or others when you write something and you specifically want to play the instrument versus you're okay sort of letting a fixer or a seasoned sessionist try it?
I mean, if it's a guitar instrument, then I'm going to play it 98% of the time. There's a couple of things, times where there's something very specialized, like speaking of the Danna Brothers, when we did The Good Dinosaur, there was a cue that needed like a real banjo part, like a true down home, maybe Texan banjo part. And I'm okay at that, but it had to be legit. And so I had somebody come in who was like legit bluegrass, and he hit it out of the park. So, but most of the time, I'm going to do that. On a score like Hunting Wives, I mean, the instruments I'm using are from this collection of kind of odd and rare guitars I have from all around the world. So I'm sort of the only one that can play them because they're all very unusual and they've been fixed up to work for me in just the way they can work. So Hunting Wives is a great example of me sort of picking through my collection and going, oh, that's kind of weird. And that's always out of tune, but I can get it in tune just long enough to record it and things like that. So there's a lot of me playing on this score. I think there's only five musicians on the whole score, and I'm the main one just because of the way the score happened to turn out with the guitar sound at the forefront.
Okay. Well, speaking of those unique instruments or in tune attitude, when you get to a track like Mrs. Banks, that is almost the modern day epitome of mustache twirling in a way. It kind of you can just kind of tell that there's something rotten in Denmark, just short of like there's a bit of irony in what she's saying. So, do these characters or the story or does this really give you the opportunity to go, tie somebody to the train tracks type villain? Or do you still try to hold yourself back?
Well, that really depends on the scene or the film and the filmmaker. One of the things that we have to think about as composers that really don't, it doesn't usually occur to people outside of our process is that we can think of all sorts of things, but we have to get the approval tacitly or otherwise from our director. So you can have this idea for this really ambitious, crazy left field score, but if your filmmaker just says, what you want to do what? Then that's not going to work. So in the case of Mrs. Banks, that was the first cue where I was thinking, we're set in Texas and it's, there's a lot of these southern tropes, as it were, in the story itself. And it would be great to somehow find a way into this sound that was at home in the geography of Texas, but not necessarily exactly with it, like not exactly the sound of Texas. So I looked around my collection. I had this instrument called a prim, which is Croatian, Eastern European, and it is all I've actually never used it before. And it's this weird thing with seven strings that I found a couple of years ago out at this folk museum music store in Claremont, California. And I like it because it sounds sort of like a mandolin, but it has this resonating quality, this resonance to it that really sounds kind of Eastern and moody. And I thought, oh, maybe this is just kind of like Texas music, but turned on its side a little bit. Just the way Sophie sort of looks, sorry, Margot sort of looks like something, but boy, she's really turned on her side inside, right? So I thought, well, this might be a good way to do it. So I came up with that little line that starts out Mrs. Banks. And I was like, oh, this is neat. I mean, as long as she doesn't think, oh, it's a little too exotic. Then I think this would be a cool way into this score. And that was how that cue, which was one actually the first one I wrote, I think, was Mrs. Banks. And
Okay.
just to get Margot's enchanting powers in music somehow. And everything kind of went from that cue right there and that instrument actually.
Gotcha. Well, she is a Wolverine in a dress, so I think I can see
Yes.
how your process would have been a little bit of a
Yeah.
head scratcher to get it right.
It was. That she was, I mean, the balance on this one was tough because we couldn't tip over into too much of anything that was obviously on the screen. It's like, yeah, it's sexy on the screen, but let's hold back a bit or go over here, and yeah, it's treacherous on the screen, but let's be a little more psychological maybe. So that was definitely a challenge, that first one, especially getting everyone to agree on it.
Gotcha. Well, there's a track I liked simply because I'm not sure what I'm hearing, so placing it was a bit difficult. But in the trend the cue, Cabin Intruder, I'm not sure, is that a marxophone or a piano or something else? It kind of feels old-timey but echoey.
I know there was definitely like some conventional things like a Telecaster on it. Actually, you know what? I'm almost certain I know what it is now, but let me just make sure I give you a good answer here. Right. So there's two sort of main acoustic instruments in here. One's a quattro, and I have a 10-string, I think it's a Portuguese quattro. I think there's two kinds of quattros, and the one that I found has 10 strings, and it's playing a lot of the sound you hear in there. Then the other thing I have in there that's really kind of neat is this thing called a bandurria, which has 12 strings on it. It's this little tiny Spanish instrument. It's really cool. The only other time I used it was on the Addams Family movies, because it sort of has a bit of a gypsy feeling, but I mixed it with Telecaster and some prepared piano and stuff and a cello, but those two instruments have the forefront, the quattro and the bandurria. And again, just trying to figure out ways to be plucky like one would think Texas sounds like, but in a way that's just a little bit turned sideways to help give the show its own musical identity, which helps just give the show an identity.
Yeah. And I think just the narrative and the sort of larger than life characters give you that opportunity to go, quote unquote, balls out. And I think it works. So it's great
Thanks.
when something, you're afforded that opportunity, because it makes it unique. So.
Works for me. I mean, I'm always trying. That's one of the criteria. Is it tuneful? Is it unique? I'm trying to always get those two things in there. And a lot can be working against composers when they go to do that. We can have producers say, yeah, what's that high thing? And, well, that's the melody. Yeah, if you get rid of that, it's great. So there's a lot to work for and against the music. But if Hunting Wives turned out unique, then that's really, that makes me happy, because that's I'm trying for it.
In a weird way, it almost plays like fan fiction of a soap opera. Like, it's the stuff that you expect happen behind closed doors, or like, soap operas never go over the line. Well, this show went over the line. So,
Yes, it did. It certainly did.
in that respect, I like to say that it's not a good show, meaning it's not a good show to watch in your house. You never know when your kid's going to come in. It's not a good show to show to people who might think this is actually what Texas is. But in that case, I tell them, yes, that is what Texas is, because if you don't come here, our freeways will be a little less jammed. So,
I
PSA for you. PSA for you.
will pass that on to Rebecca. I love that.
But Jeff, talk to me about your skill as talking about the quattro and the guitarist. It seems like this project in particular let you also focus on imperfections, things like string speak, guitar talk, all the things that happen that aren't polished. So how much was there a line for you, and did you kind of revel in that?
I mean, when you're a composer, it's hard to stay a player, so to speak. There's a real line. When you come to a city like Los Angeles, where the best players at their instrument in the world are here, you realize that whatever kind of musician you thought you were as a composer, you're dirt, because the people here, it's crazy. The top percentile of the violin players are here. The top percentile of piano players and the guitar players are here. So, if I wanted perfect guitars, I wouldn't and couldn't play them. But that's kind of the thing, going back to that idea of being unique, is that I have this way of playing that's a little bit off and odd. And like you said, you have good ears, because I do have some string squeaks and stuff in there. And a lot of players, when they're playing perfectly, they just don't have any squeak. But for me, I consider it to be part of the world of the show, and I'm happy to have it not be perfect. On this show, we would take the players who came in, like Chris Ahn, our cello player, who's obviously like an amazing, polished classical cello player, and I would go, so Chris, we're going to play some Trailer Park Cello today. Like, we got some seriously Trailer Park scenes and characters in this show. And I said, can you play it worse? Can you play it uglier? Can we play way down on the bridge? And then we would do a bunch of takes, and I would say, yeah, really just give me some grind and some like unhappy cello here for a second. And then we played a lot of the percussion and stuff was sounds we made with his cello. We hit it with a pencil, we hit it with our hands and stuff. And so in a lot of those interrogation scenes, for example, there's just the sounds of us smacking away on that cello and just trying to be a little bit broken down, because so many of the characters in Rebecca's story and the settings are like that. So yeah, we for this show especially, imperfection really worked.
Well, as a well, I couldn't say cinema goer, as a couch surfer, watching this in subtitles, because children in life, and you just need to kind of understand what people are saying.
Good plan.
You pick up different things. So sometimes when your music surfaces, The closed captions give you some really funny things. It'll say discordant music. So I'm like, Jeff, what do you think? Do you think discordant is appropriate to describe your work? Is it apt?
That's hilarious. I have not watched the show yet. So, I mean, because I watched it 1,000 times for 6 months last year. So I haven't actually gone to see more than like 2 minutes streaming. And that's hysterical. And yes, there's a lot of discordant, again, going back to that idea of these sort of broken down scenes and characters and trying to just be different. You know, we had a piano, but we spent a lot of time sort of like, we had another piano that was broken and we just sort of like smashed on it. And that's actually an idea I want to follow up more for next year, assuming there's a next year, was that we just kind of touched on this break a piano and make sounds with it concept. And I'm definitely going to go a lot further down that road if we get another chance. So love to hear that it's discordant, but you know, you got to have some tunes in there too. So I'm, you know, Margot and Sophie, that's like a tune. And that hopefully that was held in just enough to balance out the discordance. You have both things from the music.
Well, you know, in a weird way, I would love to see you do Harpo Marx's Day at the Races when the piano breaks and he takes the harp out of it just to avoid getting taken away by the police. And I would just love to see, hey, it's a turns the sound on its side, really. Well, there's one of the most impacting scenes in the show is where Sophie is leaving Margot a voicemail message in a hotel, and it's powerful. Her delivery is, you know, through the roof. So how do you play scenes like that where you kind of want to go toe to toe, but still stay out of the way?
I mean, I always think of music as being like the third notch up when you're thinking of notching scenes up or levels of tension or impact. I always think that the first thing is the writing, the second thing is the acting, and then the third thing is the music. So that I mean, I like it when a scene starts and just people are talking and maybe the room's starting to fill with a little bit of tension and conflict, but I'm staying out, and then you get to that moment where, wow, we've just gone up and the music comes in. So on that scene, there was a whole lot of visceral energy from the writing and the performance. So you realize like, okay, I don't need to like hammer on this because this is pretty much there, but I definitely want to fill in some more of the like how black her soul feels right now. And so I kind of underplayed that one a bit just because, I mean, I think as I recall, it's a while back now, but as I recall, I pushed the ending up a little bit to help us carry up to the peak of her phone call. But yeah, sometimes it's just there on the screen and you just want to augment it and not get in front of it.
Well, augmenting is one thing, but there's a point in the show where literally everything goes out the window. And I think that if I look at I Broke Our Rule, Jed, it's
Oh,
like
yeah.
you threw your theme and every instrument you had in a blender because it sort of like spins wildly out of proportion and kilter. So, anyway, it just seems like that's a perfect opportunity to end the show for this season.
Yeah, now that theme that the strings are playing, they're kind of like really sawing away there as she gets in her car in the rain and drives. That's actually the same tune as plays on that prim instrument at the beginning of the first episode in Mrs. Banks. That's the same six note motif when she opens the door and sees Brad in there and it's like, hey, what's going on? But now it's desperate. It's a hunted version of it, and you know, got the four or five cellos on it, just hitting it a little bit more of a conventional cinematic way, but still that same tune. And then yeah, there's just a little bit more room in some scenes, and car drives are good ones to get the music full and not worry about, well, I got to stay in, you know, below the dialogue and I can't get in front of this. That was just like, you're right, full on, like, we can just let it rip here. And that's the Hunting Wives version of letting it rip. You know, that's like 10 instruments instead of five, you know.
Well, I'll say yeehaw and holy shit to that. Well, I want to talk about how cool a guitar can be. I am still mystified, flabbergasted, taken aback, bowled over. The Boondock Saints, let's go back 25, 26 years. The
Gentlemen.
scene where Rocco gets his sort of first kill, it's just a, I wish that was my ringtone back then. It was so cool.
That was, boy, that's a long time ago. That's one of my first movies here after I moved here from Canada. Mostly I remember staying awake for the Boondock Saints because I had 3 weeks to do the whole thing. They sort of left it late, and Troy and Chris, his producer, were, it was their first real movie, and so there was stuff that they just were discovering as they went, like our first endeavor at anything. And one of them was like, "Oh man, we're almost done our movie. We haven't had a composer come on board and start yet." So that was pretty much a jam. And when I listen to that first Boondock movie, I think, "Oh, there's a lot of things I wish I could have done better if I had a little more time, a little better choir, a little better orchestra." But there's the good side about staying awake and working like crazy is sometimes just all that electricity, there'll just be a little, some sparks fly that really keep and catch. And those are the good parts of that score and that cue, for example. Those are the ones. So hard to remember all the individual cues on that. It was a very long time ago, but it was one of those sort of moments of just the everything's cooking full volume and bubbling over, and you just go with it.
Well, don't worry. I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I was not going to grill you about everything. I just wanted to, it was more of a compliment to say it's been living rent-free in my head, unlike, much like Lisa Gerrard and Gladiator. It's just like these things
Oh,
have
man.
become part of your DNA. It's like,
That's
holy
beautiful.
crap, just thrilled to be speaking with you. So.
Yeah, well, thank you. I'm glad it's last word. That's what we're trying for as writers. So glad that one stuck.
Well, let me ask you one question to take us out. Curious to know if in the process, whether it's The Hunting Wives or Onward, Kid Stays in the Picture, is there something, just the most bizarre request you ever had? Like, I can't believe they asked me to do this with Coke bottles and BB pellets or something. I don't know, just something that threw you for a loop.
Boy, I might have to think about that one. I mean, I can think of times where I said, "Oh, I would like to use Coke bottles on this," and I've used Coke bottles on a score a couple times. Trying to think where there was a really, I mean, sometimes one of the big challenges we have as composers is that that we get like a request, they'll temp a scene in with an iconic song or an iconic film cue, and then they'll go, "Yeah, well, we're not, obviously we don't want that in our movie. That's the good, the bad, and the ugly. We can't have that in our movie, but we do need you to capture everything that has in it." And my brother and I had a cue like that on that Pixar movie Onward, where we were just like, "Ay, ay, ay, that's the good and the bad and the ugly." And the filmmaker was quite attached to it, and they'd cut the whole scene to it. So it was a matter of paying homage to it, but not blatantly copying it, and also just not falling on our faces. And so that was one of the, that was a challenge that comes to mind, that sacrifice cue, as I recall, is what we called it.
Okay. Well, I want to say that the ending of Onward, as opposed to the, in addition to the whole brother's journey and the stone and the father, is like very charming, very heartfelt. So just being part of that, I want to give you a golf
Oh,
clap.
thank you. That one had
So.
a lot of meaning for us, because it was, that was our life. Like, we had the same story as the brothers, and so to see these two guys figuring it out without their dad there was like, wow, this is surreal. That's what we had to do. So, special movie for us.
Well, what can we look forward to? What's next on your horizon?
I mean, speaking of my brother, we did, right after Hunting Wives finished, we did a film together. It's a really charming family film, a British film called Flavia, which is based on the Flavia Deluce mystery stories, about an 11-year-old chemistry-centered young sleuth. It's very charming, very sweet. You don't have to worry about your kids coming in the room or using subtitles. It was pretty much the opposite, the opposite experience of Hunting Wives, in every sense. And it's very charming and family friendly. And I suppose that'll be out at the end of the year or next year. And so that was a lot of, that was a nice change after all the dire, hardcore times of The Hunting Wives.
So it sounds like quite the palate cleanser for your soul, your psyche, and I could just imagine if I was in the situation, I'd be like, honey, I'd love to come and have dinner, but I gotta get this scene. Oh, why is she topless? Oh, it's just what they wrote. What am I gonna
It
do?
was pretty funny. My assistant came in when we were still working on Flavia, and we were trying to get names for the soundtrack tracks from Hunting Wives. And I was going, okay, this is that scene from, the dead body in the woods, or this is that scene from her killing Kyle, and or what. And we were like, we would go back and visit the scenes and look at the script and go, well, they have this line and this line. And the whole time that we were doing that, the movie I was working on, Flavia, with this super charming little 11-year-old girl, was like on the screen. And Valerie said, I feel like we shouldn't even be saying these words in front of her. So it was definitely like one of those moments you go, oh yeah, we've kind of flipped the moral compass here. Boy, the life in the arts is varied, but very grateful for it, just to have so much different opportunities to have some fun with music, which is, one of the magical things we're allowed to have in this world.
Yeah. Well, thank you for your magic. I appreciate your time, Jeff. Everyone, check out The Hunting Wives, Flavia, and let's go back 25 years, 26 years. Go back to everything Jeff's ever worked on. He will melt your soul with six strings, 10 strings, 12 strings. But Jeff, our best to you, and we will catch you next time.
Hey, I really appreciate it. Thank you for having me on.